www.jabulani.org.za. Jabulani, let's feed the nation.
Drive Time on 91.3. Always on the cutting edge.
First of the Cape Drive Time, welcome to the show. 072-238-0712 is the WhatsApp line. And it's our book review. Free Book Friday is back with us. In my hand, I have a book called My Apartheid Diary. And it says, notes on the experiences related in the diary of a person classified as coloured of mixed blood in apartheid South Africa from the 1960s to the 1990s. And the author is Sir Dick Crombie, who's done a couple of things in his life. He's been a teacher. He was a mischievous youngster. And he's now a historian. He's now an author, diarist. And he also is involved in media, education and broadcasting. Siddiq, assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. And assalamu alaikum to the listeners, everybody out there, and also to yourself, Safiq, for hosting me here today. And shukran also for the kind words which you've just conveyed about me. I sometimes look at myself and say, is that really me? But shukran for the kind words, Safiq.
No, only a pleasure. Now, My Apartheid Diary is a very interesting book. I'll tell you why. As somebody who sometimes has to do historical research, the most precious historical resources are not things that give us the dates in which things happened, although that's important. It's the personal stories. And your My Apartheid Diary is a personal story, but you put so much into it. And I'm going to quickly read out what I picked out of the book. I mean, some of it's funny, but and some of it's very serious. Extraordinary detail, and these are details which I think young people doing research in future years are going to rely upon. So Dick, for example, you've got the SABC test pattern, a picture of it. And I don't know how many times all of us would look at the test pattern hoping that the television would actually come on. You've mentioned slaves, Harun, Achamau, the UDF, the Trojan Horse, the Group Areas Act. You talk about Anton France, Ashley Creel, the Rockets, Robbie Jans and the Pacific Express, and Ronnie Joyce. You've got nicknames, Milk Bottles, Herzogies, Pickled Fish, Busek Tutu, the Passion Gap. I pronounced that one correctly. You've got SARU, Bush University, SACOS, Rugby, Cricket, a Beach Apartheid at the Strand, because you come from the Strand, and I remember very well the beach protest led by Alan Busek. You've got pumpkin Nevadas, the famous Nevada trousers, the Ford Capri, grasshoppers, Ray-Bans. I could go on and on and on. But Sir Dick, how much research did it take to flesh out the real lives? I mean, you've what you've done in the book here, this is real life, and you've mentioned all these interesting details which make a person become quite nostalgic when you see the Ford Capri, the grasshoppers and the Ray-Bans, that kind of stuff.
Yes, Safiq, it wasn't a book that was going to be written in a year or two, and I've been at it for 8 years, or maybe even longer. And how it all crystallized was, sometimes you sit in Hajat, or you sit at wedding ceremonies or birthday parties or social gatherings, and mm-hmm. you talk about the days of yonder. Mm. And then you say to yourself, but it's about time, that you put that to paper as a legacy for those that comes behind us or after us, mm-hmm. rather. And then obviously, you put it away and you say, who's going to be interested in it? And then there's some other day you hear somebody who's never experienced a life under apartheid says, that's history. Move on. Don't live in the past. But I think also that Martin Luther King said, that a community, or a people rather, without a history is like a tree without roots, without
Absolutely.
Culture, etc. Mm. And then also you realize that it's about time that there's so many untold stories that need to be told. And mine is just one of those. And then as you go along, you hear people saying, move on, forgive and forget, etc. But you cannot move to the future if the legacy of the past is still very with you, mm-hmm. and because it's going to influence your future as well.
Absolutely.
So what I'm saying, Safiq, is that that which made us what we are, I don't think everybody understands why we are what we are. And obviously, for instance, the debate around support for the All Blacks as against support for our own home, I think that's probably the one country where people are much more vehement, especially in Cape Town and surrounds, to support an opposing country or nationality against their own. But where does it come from? Mm-hmm. And I was trying to unpack that as well. So that is why all of these things which you so admirably mentioned, Shafiq, you know, that's why I said, when you said earlier on who I am, basically gave a synopsis, I said to myself, is that really? And now also when you mentioned all of this, I said to myself, really? Is it all in this cover of this book? But really it is. So it came over a period of time, and it wasn't something which came over a month or two.
No, I mean, obviously not. And I think what I would recommend that people buy this book is because it's a work of nostalgia. There's some very funny moments, especially when you used to pretend you'd done your homework before watching television, and you put all your school books and say, look, I'm busy. Meanwhile, Sadiq Crombie had done no homework. Or when you ran away from your father, about three houses, the headlights following, that was very funny. Yeah. But of course, I mean, that's what storytelling is about. But underneath it, there's a very serious thread. And I think the serious thing is that you are completely unapologetic about using the word coloured, which was used so widely during the apartheid era, but you use it in the sense you are who you are, we are who we are as a community, and you unapologetically use the term. Do you think that that is, in a sense, a departure point?
Yes, Shafiq, definitely. I needed to basically focus in, and I spoke to some other people around me as well, just to bounce off them how they would perceive this. Some were quite ambivalent. Mm. Some were very vehement against being regarded. And I use that analogy in the beginning. And then there are others that says, I've been everything. So for 325 years since our forefathers came, we've been labeled. So a label doesn't necessarily bother me. It's who I am and what I am. Mm-hmm. So, yes, I deliberately did that because I believe it is a group of people, and that's why it also says between 1960 and 1990, because that is basically the primary time which I basically retracted this information from. And also why I'm saying colored is because there is a perception, especially that people of color, which I basically give a synopsis also of where they come from. Exactly. When we talk about colored people, what are they all about? That they haven't contributed to the struggle of where we are, to the struggle for democracy. And I pertinently put it out there. It is not like that. Another anomaly which we have is where people say that because of 1976, Afrikaans was the catalyst for ensuring the riots. Yes, it was, but it was not the language of the oppressor. And I touch on that in itself and saying Afrikaans is our language. You know, our forefathers, the first manuscript written in Afrikaans was the one that was written in Arabic.
And there's an irony there, Sadiq. Yeah. People always used to say that people in our community were illiterate. What I've discovered in recent research is that's a complete historical lie. Our people were literate. They were literate in Arabic. And as you've correctly said, our community was reading Afrikaans in Arabic. They were literate. They were not illiterate. They were literate on their own terms, not in terms of the colonizers or the apartheid authorities.
Definitely. When Sheikh Yusuf came here in 1694?
Yes.
Then, The governor was actually waiting to welcome him. He was a learned man. Mm-hmm. He was royalty. He was a prince from Tidore. And obviously he was a master technician when it came to warfare. They could never catch him. And they duped him into telling him, if you hand yourself over. And then they caught him. They took him to Ceylon. They brought him to Madagascar and eventually here. But they still put him out there in Makassar, where they actually thought he would be out of harm's way. But yes, Zafik, you probably know that people flock there because they even some of the burghers, and that was the settlers or what we call the colonists, they also came to him for him to write letters for them, etc. So yes, our people of it, and even Tuang Guru wrote two copies of the Quran out of his out of memory. And when they basically looked at it, they found that these Qurans, you know, there were very few deviations. And he was on Rahman Island for 12 years as a captive. And he's obviously the father of Islam as well. He brought the first Jumu'ah in the quarry in Bukab. So this is the kind of thing that we need to put out there. This cross pollination,
yep. Yeah,
of our people from different facets, whether it's Khoisan, whether it's colonist, whether it's slave, and whether it is political exiles and royalty. That makes up this context. And I know I've been very long-winded explaining why I use this term colored. So it's not solely anymore a Khoi and a San. It is all those streams. And that's why I talk about the culture, the language, the religion.
Lots of streams. I mean, our community, but incidentally, I've discovered recently, is 60% African of origin. This is not a very well-known fact, and I've just found the proof. But what is interesting, apart from that, as you so correctly say, there is the blood of every single nation beating through the veins of our community, of so-called colored community. Some people look whiter than others, some look darker than others, but when you do a DNA test, it's Tavern of the Seas, without a doubt.
Yes, no, definitely I can agree with you. But also coming back to the Afrikaans,
yep,
that I only found out, you know, and I think Mufti Toha Karan also alluded to this, is that in the first annexation of Cape Town in 1794, that when the British landed at Malgbay, that they actually they had to fight against the what they call the Hottentots Panduran, which was one of the regiments, which was the so-called Khoisan, I mean the slaves, etc.
Right.
And in 1806, when the second invasion came, the British vastly outnumbered. Everybody ran away, but once again they were now called the Cape Corps, which was the Hottentots, and a regiment from Swellendam, which was the burghers, and the Javanese infantry. That's our people,
they
obviously.
They stood their ground. Yeah.
I mean, the mercenaries ran away. The mercenaries were Hungarians and Czechoslovakians. They ran off. What we call then the Batavian battalions, they ran off. But these people, that is our people, they stood their ground. And the one binding factor was Afrikaans. They understood each other through this language. So for people to say that this is the language of the oppressor, you know, is this, as they say in Afrikaans, you know, ek het 'n broer kry dood aan die, that you know, you, it's like throwing out the baby with the bathwater.
No, absolutely. I mean, in fact, I can remember Dr. Ahmed Davids, who used to work at the radio station, watching him very closely when he was making his discoveries about the origins, the semantic origins of Afrikaans, and the amount of Malay words that are used in Afrikaans, the amount of Khoi and San words that are used in Afrikaans. It could not have been a European language if you look at some of the terminologies that are actually used in it.
Yeah, yes, no, definitely, you know, and as you rightfully once again say, Safiq, you know, that there's so much for us to be proud of, you know, our contributions to this country, and I also allude to...
We built the city.
That's right, and you say, I talk about the Dutch Gables, I talk about the fishing fields on the south and the west coast, I also talk about the... obviously not the Muslims, but the cultivation of the wine industry in the Western Cape. That all comes from, you know, from the contribution of people classified as colored per se.
No, absolutely. And you also talk about a very painful episode of history. Your family comes from the Strand. You talk about forced removals. And here we have a first-hand account of the trauma of it. And I'm glad you've got some pictures, particularly of the people forget about the Strand, but maybe because it's a bit of a drive. But I mean, equally affected as any other areas. I'm glad that you've got the Group Areas Act in there and the Immorality Act. something which I had to face in my own life, where you have policemen peering in your window at midnight to see whether you're breaking some strange law because you've married across the color bar.
Yeah, no, definitely. Shafiq, you know, I think you mentioned there were some very jocular moments, but I think the group areas and the one on the immorality or love across the color line, I think those are two of the most emotional stories, you know, that I had to write, you know. And sometimes I used to read it over, you know, and I feel a lump in my throat, you know, when I read about it.
Yeah.
I don't want to give it away, but the story on Love Across the Color Line, that's a personal rendition of one of our families from the Strand.
Mm-hmm.
And I approached the family because it's a very sensitive thing. And the mother said she doesn't seem to have a problem because at least people will understand the real context of what they had to go through. And I spoke to the eldest son. He says, but you're going to ask him. So I had a meeting with him. And he says he doesn't seem to have a problem because it could be out there, you know. Maybe there are other people that could identify. And then I wrote the story and I went back to them. It was edited thereafter. And when I read it to them, it was so sad, you know, because the tears came and glistened in her eyes.
Mm-mm.
She relived her life because they were basically the first couple across the color line that were married by our former Ustad Almarhum Maulana Yusuf Kharan.
Mm-mm.
So from the Muslim Strand Muslim Council. And that's why I also have, you know, the marriage certificate. But how they were hounded, you know, Shafiq, you'd probably be in a better position.
That's terrible. In fact, the police follow you around, and it becomes it's not a nice way to live, because every step you take, you have to open the door first and look out. Are the cops outside? Then you can move. So yes, I can relate to that. Believe me.
I think the one advantage which they had was a very supportive community. You know, our people did not necessarily go and whisper in somebody's ear, but there were two or three policemen who knew, you know, of the existence, because they have been arrested before by these policemen. So the one was constantly harping on the father, who's also passed on now, that I'm watching you, you know. Mm. And they did watch him, because the wife, you know, she said she was arrested on a number of times, and usually on a Friday, left in jail only to appear on a Monday. And when the judge would ask her, why are you breaking the laws of the country? Every time you hear the same face, what's wrong with you? To say, nothing is wrong with me. It's only for the love of my husband. What's wrong with that?
Mm-hmm.
Love is the answer. That is why I am here in your court. You know, and you could, she said, you know, you could see that he felt uneasy, you know, and said, let me not see you here again. But I don't want to run ahead, because I think that's one of the stories that people should read for themselves, because it's quite an emotional one.
Yes, it's deeply moving, and I think what it does, it fleshes out historical realities, which I think we have to remind ourselves of. Our children, for example, are not as color conscious as we had to be because of apartheid and everything. They're less color conscious, but it's good if they can understand what their grandparents and people before them actually went through.
Yeah.
Then very briefly, you do a lot about sport. And again, I often wonder whether people still appreciate the role that an organization like SACOS played, a dynamic role and a tremendous amount of sacrifice. I mean, so many world-class sports people never seeing the light of day.
Shafiq, once again, this book is about telling the stories of those people that sacrificed so much, you know. Mm-hmm. They were vehement in their fight for justice and equality in the country of their birth. And whether it was on sport, whether it was in politics, whether it was on the social sphere or wherever, but they stood their ground. And because I'm a sports lover, you know, I played a bit of rugby and cricket. So you went through the system and mm-hmm. you were basically a witness to how people sacrificed. And you could compare, because you could see the other side and you could see your own people. And you would say, but Shafiq is a much better player than Sadiq, you know, but why? You know, this is so unfair. And today, to cut a long story short, those very people that basically sacrificed so much And nowhere in the annals of South African or South African history or South African sports history.
Absolutely.
And that is, you know, that is like kicking sand in the face of those who sacrificed so much. They, a lot of our people are passing on. Nobody gives a rendition of who Salif Fredericks, Kasim Jabbar, or whoever else was. And I'm also alluding to this now, Safiq, because why? That is my next project. I've already gone around and interviewed a number of these stalwarts of the non-racial sports fraternity. And if you look at somebody, and I give him a special place also, is Hassan Hawa.
Yes.
Who coined the phrase "no normal sport" in it? That man was a paragon of virtue.
Sorry, Sadiq, we're going to cut for the headlines. After that, to Hassan Hawa, and then the commercial side of My Apartheid Diary, which of course has been published by the Al Kaf Trust. After the headlines, we're going to come back with Sadiq Crombie, and we're going to tie up all the loose ends.
Drive Time on 91.3, always on the cutting edge.
Coming up in your bulletin at 6, High Court dismiss cigarette ban and the bid to have the National COVID-19 Command Council declared unconstitutional. Robben Island Museum Council goes ahead with corruption investigation. The Automobile Association predicts a spike in fuel prices. And India accuses Beijing of escalating tensions at the Himalayan border. Those are your headlines. Catch the details at the top of the hour.
Assalamu alaikum and sawadika. Did you know that Simply Asia Heritage Square, located at 96 Short Market Street, is now fully halal certified and serves all your favorite Simply Asia Thai dishes? We're also one of a few bespoke halal sushi restaurants in the CBD. Order now for delivery or collection via our online app or call 060-SIMPLY-D for in-house delivery at a minimum cost to surrounding areas. Deliveries are also available via Mr. Delivery and Uber Eats. We are open daily 12 p.m. to 8 p.m. Simply Asia. Authentic Thai. Made simple.
Yes, indeed. Weather very stormy tomorrow, but let's get back to our book review. My Apartheid Diary, the author Sadiq Crombie. It's published by the Kaf Trust. And hats off to Kaf Trust, Dr. Anwar Nagia, who have published so many books that really need to see the light of day. And My Apartheid Diary is certainly one. So this is something that everybody who listens to Voice of the Cape should have on their bookshelves. It deals with so many aspects of our social history from 1962 to 1990. So, Dick, very, very briefly, you just got into the topic of Hassan Hawa. We can't not leave things without mentioning him. I was just saying off air, I can remember interviewing him and him talking about all the secret meetings he had with Ali Bacha and the difficulties he had explaining to Ali Bacha, who thought he'd gone all the way, that going all the way would mean a normal society.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think the credo that Hassan Hawa used, you know, which is very much renowned for, was no normal sport in an abnormal society. I think that encapsulated very well. Hassan Hawa is one of a number of stalwarts of non-racial sports.
Mm-hmm.
There's Dula Abbas, you know, there's a whole host of others, Nwechi Khan, and I can mention, go on and on. But the thing was this, that because the draconian laws of the then apartheid regime and the state security apparatus were so vehement, you know, and so violent, that there were other means that the disadvantaged communities or the oppressed communities needed to use, and sport was going to be that vehicle. Because it was basically a non-violent mobilization of the masses.
Mm.
And that's why one could not leave that out, you know. That was the alternative. And it is actually sad to note, you know, where we are in sport today in South Africa, once again, that those people that basically sacrifice so much are not even reminisced about. They are not being remembered. There's no stadiums, walls, you know, in the stadia named after these people. I mean, there should have been a Hassan Hawa Stadium at Western Province Cricket. He was the doyen. He was a paragon. You know, I can go on and on. He was an icon. And he stood steadfast right up until the end. And he passed on the day, you know, before Mandela came to power. So the non-racial, I mentioned it there, did it die on that day with him, you know? Because what we have today...
That's an open question, isn't it? Because if you talk to anybody from the SACOS fold, you find that I think there's a huge amount of disillusionment. And I think, to be honest with you, it's justified.
Yes, because we have been a very accommodating. We believed, you know, the reconciliation is going to be the vehicle that will ensure that our people will be brought in, not assimilated. That is what happened. We were assimilated, but integrated. And we were, unfortunately, we were assimilated. There's nothing that denotes our history. If I talk about our history, I talk about the oppressed masses, only to find that you still have the glorified history of the inglorious Springboks who played just for 8% of the population. You still hear about Manikis Roo, Frick de Prix, but you don't hear about our side. And that is a travesty and the injustice of our new democracy.
Absolutely.
That we could turn a blind eye to all those foot soldiers who were the people, basically, who, you know, brought us to where we are. And when we handed over on the brink of the new democracy to leadership, the first phase of that leadership, and I mean, that's a debate on its own, would probably have listened, but nowadays, you know, it's like, and that is one of the reasons why this book had to be written, because the second phase of our democracy, after the second election, you know, those contributions of those people are becoming obsolete, it's being hidden, and it does not come to the fore in its rightful sense. Because we, what we have today in South Africa, the democracy, even the sport, is on the shoulders of those people that sacrifice so much, but it's not reflected anyway.
Absolutely. Now, Sir Dick, it's time for the commercial side of My Apartheid Diary. Recommended for every single bookshop, for every single bookshelf and every single home. This is a social history with emotion, with passion. It's well written. There are photographs. It's nostalgic. It's funny. It's sad. It's got everything. So, Dick, how do we get hold of it?
I think there are two ways. We try to keep the cost for the reader as low as possible. And in conjunction with the Calf Trust, Dr. Nadia, we have decided that we're going to sell it ourselves. Putting it on the shelves of the usual suspects in the malls is going to inflate the price drastically and unnecessarily. So what we've decided is, Shafiq, is people can contact us. I'm also working closely with some of my other colleagues. For instance, Wendell Darris, he's in Athlone. In Repulse Road.
All right, so Wendell Darris in Repulse Road. If people knock on your door...
They can phone him. They're coming
for the book.
Yeah, they can just phone him before, and because of lockdown and, you know, certain steps that has to be followed, you have to phone him, and you can pick up the book there from him. I've got Naeem Davids in Wellington. That's also standing ready in this week. I need to deliver some with him. There's another little rider to this. What we did is... We've got a small Uber company in Strand, and the person involved there is Sakur Valley. And he can also be contacted. But what people can do, I leave my number if they need to be in a certain area, have a book delivered. They phone me. There's also a trust account of the Calf Trust that the money can be paid in. You use your proof of payment. I'll put you in touch with Sakur and his colleague Nazim, and you can work with them because they do it separately from this.
Right.
So he will probably tell you, okay, you're out in maybe Belleville. Okay, it's going to cost you 120 Rand for me to bring the book. If he's got more than one book that he delivers in that area, then obviously it will be probably
cheaper.
Yeah. So that is one, some of the ways that we've envisaged, you know, we want to ensure that it's circulated as far as possible, as wide as possible.
So the number, what is the number that if I want to get a copy of the book, I can dial?
Okay, my number is 083-234-6056. And the number for Dr. Nadia is 082-418-1898. But you can also get it from the Human Rights Palestinian Museum in Gore Street, Zonnebloem District.
Yes, and in fact, if somebody wants to get the other productions from Al-Kaf Publications, and there's a wide array of books, you can get anything there from books on Palestine, My Apartheid Diary, works by Zubeda Jaffa. There's lots of stuff, interesting stuff, that you can get from the Al-Kaf Trust at the Palestine Museum in District 6. Yeah. Yeah. So it's close to Masjid Mosque. Yeah.
That's the other way of getting hold of the book. I'm staying behind here as well, Safiq, for another 40, 45 minutes. If anybody's interested, I can meet them downstairs here by the studio. Obviously, with lockdown regulations being adhered
to. Social distancing will
be. Exactly.
Yeah,
and then, yeah, I've already got one or two people that indicated they're meeting me here today.
Right.
And then I'll probably move off to Athlone quickly, and then people can also meet me. But they've got my number, then they can say, tell them where.
Right, 083, I'm just going to give one number, 083-234-6056. You dropped your pencil, I know. Okay, 083-234-6056. That's the Dick's number. He's here right now. You can call him, and you want to get a copy of the book, you can get one. And, of course, so all proceeds from this book are going back to the Al-Kaf Trust so that they can actually produce more books. And, of course, Sadiq is already working on his second book. That's going to be about our rugby heroes, I have no doubt, Saru and all that kind of stuff. We look forward to that. Sadiq Krumbi, it's been a pleasure.
It's been a pleasure. I also want to take the opportunity of thanking you, Safiq, and the management for hosting me here today, and also my colleagues on the Trust here at Voice of the Cape, you know, Sukran, for making it possible for me for hosting this platform. And lastly but not least, I also want to thank the Almighty for giving me the opportunity and the skills to be able to write a book. I'm just the vehicle. I think it comes from the higher order. Shukran, Shafiq.
Afan. And may My Apartheid Diary by Sadiq Krumbi go from strength to strength. And on that note, time to meet and to greet for Drive Time for the whole week. Produced by Ibrahim Kangwa Chibwe, Foldy van der Lidi behind the desk, Fasih Peterson behind the desk doing traffic, and Tohira Sali on news. From myself, Shafiq Morton, enjoy the weekend. Check out The Storm. Assalamu alaikum.
Drive Time 91.3. Always on the cutting edge.